room with a ruler, get your
hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I gotta admit it, I've been kind of busy today. Anything happen? I'm gonna have to wing it this evening. I've been so tied up. I mean, I went to try to get the vehicle up to the mechanic shop, and well, in the process of just moving the damn thing, the rotor seized up on the right side. So I'm not kidding about the seizing up part. That really happened. It's up there at the garage now. God only knows how much this is going to cost. But I'm kidding about the, did anything happen today? I know what happened today. Being one of the several million targets of what happened today, I know what happened today. I really do. Hey, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to hang out with the hip, cool, happening folks in the Horn chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Hoghead and Laborman and VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a Guild, the Spacing Guild Master, has folded space this evening to become Man Cave because it's 91 degrees in Northern California, and he's got the fans going, and it probably sounds like an aircraft hangar in there. But that's what Sparky's doing today. You'll have a rollicking good time in the merry multimedia madcap real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yep. This is, I will note early on, a listener-supported broadcast enterprise. This is a broadcast by progressives, for progressives, of progressives. And it, you know, we don't have all the talk radio advertising for mattresses that pick up bowling balls and listen to radios and grow hair with herbal tonics. And no, we have a core group of listeners who keep things going. And so thanks very much to the overnight crowd. And thanks to everybody who got us out of the hole last night. And I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, the fourth day of May, 2017. Among other things, it's the anniversary of the massacre at Kent State University in Ohio. And at any rate, we try to raise $200 every evening. And I'm going to go ahead and say, if it is all humanly possible, and this is simply a request on my part, again, just a reminder, I'm not a multimillionaire. This is a program that was conceived by Boss Man Wayne and me back in 2003.
and went online only in 2005 as a living memorial to his departed and beloved wife. And nobody here has ever expected to get rich, which is a good thing because no one is. This is radio for the working day. And so when something happens, like, you know, a massive repair to a vehicle, it either happens here or it doesn't happen at all. So I'm going to ask very kindly if we can just finish out the week's fundraising this evening. $400, 10 people at $40, 40 people at $10, etc. 8 people at $50, 16 at $25, 32 at $12.50, 64 at $6.25, 128 at $3.13, and we'll, by God, we're gonna add that extra half penny into the repair bill. There's a lot of things you get out of this program that you never hear on any other. Oh, this is one of them. I'm sure that Tom Hartman or Stephanie Miller, none of those ever going, hey, I got to fix the car. But then again, this is radio for working stiffs. And that's what we all are. So, like I said, if we can finish fundraising this evening, it would be very, very helpful going toward tomorrow. If we can't, just coming up with the $200 that we try to raise every evening would be helpful. I hate sweating the small stuff. Jesus, I do. But that's how it goes. So, you know, the PayPal button is there at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And, you know, with any luck at all, we'll knock this down. But hey, at least you get to tune in every night, and nobody's asking you to buy anything. Nobody's asking you to waste your money on some capsules that'll make your head grow hair like a chia pet does the, you know, grass. Right? Yeah. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that part? I forget. Note coming in early, and it might sort of set the tone for the rest of the evening. Note coming in early from Laurel, there in southwest Minnesota. To all you Trump voters, that Chinese-made MAGA hat of yours can also be used as a collection basket for your sick loved ones. True. Yeah, I know what happened today. Thank you very kindly, Jack, for getting us started. Thank you very much. So we'll call it 360 to go. Thank you, Jack. I followed it very closely all morning long. I was focused on my particular member of the House of Representatives, a creep by the name of Evan Jenkins, who was first elected to office back in 2012, replacing my congressman, a man with some real flaws, but who had steadfastly supported the right of West Virginians to go to the doctor when they're sick, a man named Nick Rahal. He never met a mountain that he didn't want to see blown to smithereens, but, you know, that teaches us a lesson about the nature of politics. There are no perfect candidates. Not even one. And one pursues perfection at the peril of the good, to paraphrase the old aphorism, do not let the perfect become the enemy of the good. So Evan Jenkins, riding a wave of Nick Rahal supports the Obama war on coal. Well, Evan Jenkins
who once upon a time was a Democrat, and then another time was a Republican, and then he was a Democrat, and then he was a Republican, decided he was a teabagging Republican, and danged if he ain't a member of the Congress now. And he apparently has the independent judgment of a dung beetle. Because, you see, it's like this. Every year, there is a battle of sorts. It's a battle in which the combatants do not wish to participate. Because the combatants are, to a man, to a woman, to a child, sick. And they live in the 5th District of Kentucky and the 1st District of West Virginia. The 1st District of West Virginia is, of course, represented by Evan Jenkins and happens to be where I live. The 5th District of Kentucky is represented by Hal Rogers. And the competition that takes place on an annual basis between those two districts is a competition as to which district has the most sick people in it. Because when that tally is determined, then that district becomes the single sickest district in the entire United States. Not poorly, not miserable. The sickest district in the United States. And today, and it's, by the way, let's just get this out of the way. It is no coincidence that both of those two districts, the 5th in Kentucky and the 1st in West Virginia, are riddled with mountaintop removal. Okay? So, that's the nature of the competition. And it is a revolting competition. And I think it really is a descriptive of this Republican bill in microcosm to point out that the two congressmen who represent the two sickest districts in the entire United States eagerly voted to take health care away. Life-saving health care. Critically needed health care away from their constituents on this day, the 4th day of May 2017. And may the 4th be with you. What does it mean to have health care taken away in the case of the 1st District of West Virginia? I mean, I wish. I know there's been a lot of focus on this Congress creep and that Congress creep, but I really wish my friend Chris Hayes would take a long look at Evan Jenkins, because he's a poster child. Poster boy. For the ideological slavishness, if I may dare use that term, of the GOP. There are, as I said, 213,000 people in this district who will lose their health care if this bill makes it through the Senate and is then signed by Comrade Kumquat. Okay? And it's not like there are 213,000 folks with low body mass index and great health in the first place. West Virginia hovers around the top of the list in terms of the age of its population. So that means that of those 213,000 constituents of Evan Jenkins that I'm talking about, a whole bunch of them are old. And given what I've said to you already about the fact that it's this one or it's two, one or it's one of the two sickest districts in the country, a lot of them are sick. So simply to curry favor with the GOP, simply to curry favor with Paul Ryan, who never met a granny, he didn't want to starve. Evan Jenkins today signed a death warrant for some several thousand of the 213,000 people whose health care he wants to have stripped from them. This is reality. This is not a joke. I guess it's no surprise, since Evan Jenkins also supports the wholesale poisoning of his constituency. But surprise or no, as Willie Loman's wife noted toward the end of Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. Oh, hell with them. They voted for Trump anyway. Let them die. Fuck them. Well, I didn't. And neither did a whole bunch of other people here. And if we had health care, we'd lose it. And if we don't, we'll never get it. And we're just like everybody else in the district. Sick. So, that's what Evan Jenkins did. Among other things, if you are pregnant after this bill is passed, the cost of that pregnancy is going to go up $17,000. If after this bill is passed, it turns out that you have rheumatoid arthritis, It's going to cost you an extra $5,000 to keep having rheumatoid arthritis, if you'd like to have anything resembling treatment for it. If you have metastatic cancer, the additional cost of that to you in this district or any other in the United States is going to be on the order of north of $140,000. Now, I can't speak for people in that district in Virginia where Loudoun and Fairfax counties are, one of the richest places in the United States. But I think it's safe to say that in most of the districts of this country, people don't just have an extra 140 large lying about in case they get cancer. In point of fact, in a lot of districts in this country, they don't have the extra 5 large laying about that it's probably going to cost to stick them in a cardboard box and have them burnt when the cancer gets them because they didn't have the $140,000. That is what the Republican Party did to the American people today. Plain and simple. If ISIS had a plan to kill 30,000 people next year, the Pentagon would be going wild trying to stop it. Republicans would be screaming inside the halls of Congress with their hair on fire about the risk to 30,000 Americans from ISIS. Fuck ISIS. ISIS doesn't need to do dick. Because the Republican Party is more than happy to do the work of ISIS for them. Okay? If a person with a gun, well, this is probably not going to work out as an analogy. Because I was going to say that if a person with a gun or people with guns were randomly picking off 29,000 people or so every year, by God, we'd do something about it. But of course, this is the United States of America. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, amen, under God's Second Amendment. And no, we wouldn't do anything about it. But it still has the same summary effect. My congressman, Evan Jenkins, did the political equivalent today. As did Hal Rogers, as did Doug LaMalfa in Sparky's district, as did virtually every Republican. There were a handful who were allowed by Paul Ryan to vote no because they were deemed to be in at-risk districts. But they put guns to their constituents' heads. Or to work the analogy a little bit more, they put a bullet in a revolver. One bullet. And they handed it to one of their constituents and said, "You first." They spun the cylinder. Click. The name of the game is Republican Roulette. Click. Click. Man, when you get past that third click, it's got to get pretty sickening. Click. Bang! The Republican Party came after the very lives of Americans today, and we as mere citizens are foreclosed from doing a goddamn thing about it, except voting. What did Emma Goldman say? If voting mattered, it would be illegal. Well, I don't want to be quite that much of a Debbie Downer. But the fact of the matter is, thanks to things like voter suppression and gerrymandering, for what, the last three at least election cycles, maybe four, five, Democrats and Democratic candidates as an aggregate percentage of the sum total of votes cast, Democrats get far more votes every 2 years in the congressional elections than do Republicans. But because of the bizarre degree of gerrymandering that has taken place, coupled with the blessing of the Supreme Court run by old balls and strikes Roberts, the Republicans still maintain an almost unassailable majority in House and Senate. I like to think it might be possible to punish these bastards for what they've done today, as they celebrated their victory on the floor of the House today. Democrats, if I understand correctly, as the bill passed, well, this is what happened. Final vote tally was 216 to 211, the exact number of votes that the Republicans had to have. And with the 216th vote being cast, the Democrats began to chant.
The pressure on those five Republicans, one of them has to walk the plank. Let's listen in.
Oh, there it is.
They hit 216. They hit 216 votes.
They can still change their minds, but as of right now, the 216 number has been achieved. The Republicans will declare victory at this stage. The president just tweeted, by the way, if victorious, Republicans will be having a big press conference at the beautiful Rose Garden of the White House immediately after the vote. And Nia, it looks like the Republicans have it.
Yeah, they did. And it looks like those two Democrats who had looked like they voted for it changed their mind, probably a mistake there. And we'll see what this president says in terms of the messaging. It's a big moment for him. So many doubts in those first 100 days that he could get something done. And now he has.
All right, let's listen to the floor of the House.
A Republican singing
it. gets kind of noisy in there. I'm not so sure it was the Democrats chanting na 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 hey 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 goodbye. It might very well have instead been Republicans singing it about Obamacare. If Democrats are that convinced that the Republicans will lose their majority in the House in 2018. I would be very, very careful about unhatched chicken counting. More expressive of what went on in the House of Representatives today, more telling, were the remarks of Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, who did not hold back, in her opinion, of what the Republicans had done. This.
I thank the speaker very much. I want you to look and keep your eyes on who will feel the Trump Cares mother of all bombs of health care dropped on the American people. God have mercy on your soul. I am a person living with a pre-existing disease. I am a breast cancer survivor. And this heartless and callous bill Robin Hood of stealing from the poor or the seniors, laying in their bed where you're doing an age test that is five times more than any other young person has pittance that you've given for pre-existing condition. $8 billion. They say you need 25, and then you're telling the states, oh, get a waiver. That's going to celebrate. And then you're saying to Trump, the king, that we have who make a lot of profit. And I want to say this. I don't want the General poor ladies, to sleep under bridges, to steal bread from the market, because they can't get any health.
On your souls. In we call the faith community, that phrase carries some weight. And yeah, Steve from Georgia Stan pointing out that was Republicans singing na 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 hey 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 goodbye, because they were, well, I wonder if they'll stand outside the will Evan Jenkins stand outside the funeral homes and do that? Man, I tell you what, they got them a culture of life, don't they? These Republicans, these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Republicans. They got them a culture of life. But we're not done with the Sheila Jackson Lee clip. No. Every word she spoke was true. Every word she said was fact. Except for the part about God have mercy on their souls, because you can't have mercy on something that doesn't exist. That's not a religious statement on my part. That's a comment on the nature of the Republican being. But her time expired, and boy, I tell you what, the speaker of the day was on top of it, wasn't he? He wasn't gonna hear any more of that God have mercy on your souls, because that some bitch was gonna vote to take away 29 million people's health care too. Right? And he felt good about it, because there'd be money for him from the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and the Koch brothers. Who's going to be good, high living, right? But coming next to the podium was a nasty ass representative named Doug Collins from Georgia. Stan. He, of course, can't stand the idea of people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick, you know, unless they're him. Representing Doug Collins of Georgia is, of course, a minister, an evangelical minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the God of love. And upon arriving at the podium, he said the following.
She will suspend. The gentleman from Georgia is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, if I had to defend Obamacare, I'd go into hysterics too.
You got that, Mr. Speaker? If I had to defend Obamacare, I'd go into hysterics, too. Because that's what it was. It was hysterics. Now, this is one of those moments when it's good to hang out with a practitioner of the art of word knowing. I don't suppose anybody's going, is the word hysterics, is the hashtag hysterics trending on Twitter yet in an attempt to make the life of Representative Doug Collins a living hell? If not, it should be. because of the root meaning of the word hysterics. We understand hysterics to mean behavior that is beyond the scope of anything resembling normal, behavior that is all out of bounds of reason, behavior that is approaching something that we sometimes refer to as crazy. I mean, you heard Representative Jackson Lee, and she sure sounded crazy, didn't she? No, she didn't. She sounded like someone who is deeply concerned for the well-being of the 24 million Americans whom the GOP has just enrolled in an involuntary death lottery. That's like. But since you hang out with a practitioner of the art of word knowing, I can tell you that the word hysterics, hysterectomy, there's a hint. The word hysterics comes from the Greek root word for the Latin word uterus or womb. Because back when medical science believed that illnesses were caused by demons or black bile or, being female, it was believed that women behaved irrationally because they had problem wombs. And so, even though I'm sure that representing Doug Collins is not nearly intelligent enough, being how he's a preacher and all, to know the root meaning of hysteria, the etymology of the word hysterics, he essentially accused Sheila Jackson Lee of being irrational for no other reason than her gender. What was the quote? Yeah. Mr. Speaker, if I had to defend Obamacare, I'd probably go into hysterics too. Let's translate that using our art of word knowing, shall we? Mr. Speaker, if I had to defend Obamacare, I'd probably sound like a woman, too. It's moments like this that I think back favorably into the misty, dim, and ancient past. To a time before even the Athenian democracy had arisen. A time before the events out of which were built the Iliad and the Odyssey took place. To a time before the ascendancy of the rationality of the god Apollo, when the most worshipped deity was named Bacchus, or in Greek, Dionysus. And Dionysus, had followers, women, known as the Maenads. And during his annual festival, which apparently involved a copious consumption of wine, and possibly various and sundry herbs and fungi and plant material and whatnot. It was that time period where human sacrifice was still practiced. And one lucky guy would have his lights scrogged out for a period of time until it came time for the festival. When the Minods would get wasted and take the lucky guy up on a hilltop and give him one last good rogering, and then tear him to pieces and come back down the hill, still half mad, hysterical even, covered in blood and gore and guts and veins in their teeth. I couldn't help but think of the Minods when I heard the words of Representing Collins. Where's a good Minod or 20 when you need one? I'm trying to walk a very, very fine line on privilege here, especially the male variety and the white variety. Don't want to tell anybody what to do or anything, but Representing Collins should have several very bad days for that remark, and God, I hope he does, because it's the least we can do in return for what he has voted to do to several million women and men and children. It's a time for remembering, News Ninja Gene points out, yeah, the hey-hey goodbye people were GOP scum, according to the BBC. They're so happy. Oh, they're just tickled pink. There's going to be a whole bunch of people ain't got no health care, and they're going to fucking die. Of course, they probably wasn't voting for us anyways. Yeah. So, this goes back, Reverbo, are you out there, buddy? How many years ago was it that you turned me on to Altered Carbon? And the way that Reverbo turned me on to Altered Carbon was this quote. And it fits this situation to a T. The personal as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide from under it with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way you stand a better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous, And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous, marks the difference, the only difference, in their eyes, between players and little people. Players they will make deals with. Little people they liquidate. And again, they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture, and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business. It's politics. It's the way of the world. It's a tough life, and that it's nothing personal. Well, fuck them. Make it personal. Book was written in, I think, 2001, and that is one of the most profound political statements that I have read in my entire life. Take this particular issue, this bill. Is there a more clear statement? Is there a more true statement than players they will make deals with, little people they liquidate? Make no mistake, all of us in this little community, this Horn Family Community Congregation, all of us are little people to them. 24 million little people to them. And those are the people who lose their health care. Then, as Sheila Jackson Lee noted, there's the elderly whose costs, or the older Americans whose costs, go up five times as much as a younger person's. Because, you see, this is a way that the GOP developed of not just waging class war, but waging intergenerational war. Of keeping people out of the mix. Sort of like the executive order that the Tangerine Tiberius signed earlier today, his religious freedom executive order. At one point in time, it had much harsher language in it with regard to the LGBTQQQ community. That has been taken out in the hopes that by taking it out, they will marginalize one of the single most powerful, single most committed, single most effective activist groups in this country, namely the LGBTQQQ community. If they can get them to sit on the sidelines, then they can screw the rest of us with their religious liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. See how it works. Note coming in from Carol Baker. Bob, I'm not kidding. I just saw this, and immediately my first thought was for all the Republicans who get voted out of Congress for this. I have found their next career move. Clearly, they have experience. It's estimated some 29,000 Americans will now die without health care. If ISIS killed 29,000 Americans, we'd carpet bomb the Middle East. Republicans do it, and it's called fiscal responsibility. Precisely. This to which Carol refers is a now hiring sticker next to the a sign that simply says men. Yeah. It's called fiscal responsibility. And again, that's straight out of the Richard K. Morgan quote. And time and again, they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture, and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business, it's politics, it's the way of the world. It's fiscal responsibility. It's a tough life, and it's nothing personal. And what comes after that? Well, fuck them. Make it personal. Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, this being Steve in China. Deliberation decimation. This thing passed by one vote? Talk about primed for the kill. Or is that premium for the kill? Seriously, can't the American people see deliberate population reduction when it's being put into high gear? Or isn't the cheering on of killing the citizens you represent not already ghoulish enough? It goes hand in hand with sending jobs offshore and watching the bottom line. It's politics. It's the way of the world. It's a tough life, and it's nothing personal. Fiscal responsibility. Family values. Yeah. By the way, thank you, Laurel, for jumping in. We're at 350. And I have happy news. There's a $200 challenge on the table, courtesy of Sparky. Sparky will match the next $200 that come in, which will hopefully get the vehicle back on the road. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you very kindly. That's how this little community operates. Thank you very much indeed. So, for the next 200 bucks, every buck gets turned into two. Every 5 to 10, every 10 to 20, 20 to 40, etc. Thank you, Sparky. Larry with a note. The writing was on the wall for this to happen, yet I'm disappointed at other progressive hosts. One in particular, a lady I really, really have admired for years, was out there talking shit the past couple of weeks of how we are winning and getting excited like we owned an NBA team and just fucking drafted Michael Jordan. People really need to wake the fuck up for real. This is a war on our rights, and they got the corporate money, and they also can play it off to the ignorant masses like they are the rebels and the ones who really want to save you from Big Brother. I still can't believe, but I do believe, how fucking stupid, lazy, and complacent on a million levels the collective of our nation is. We're locked in a what's not a race, not a war on poverty, but a war on stupidity. We can no longer ever forget just what a huge overall mountain to climb we still have staring us in the face to ever right this ship and truly make America great again. And not again, but for the first time ever, really. I mean, if we want to get real with ourselves. The GOP nutters talk all this shit about Obama death panels. Well, they just created theirs with a hike raise to the elderly. Capricorn 3174. Carousel awaits. Soylent Green is people! Yeah. And here's the fun part. They were all in such a lather to get this done because, see, June the 15th is the last day for reconciliation bills to be passed in the House and the Senate. And so by getting this bill done today, they can get it over to the Senate and it can be passed with just 51 Senate votes. In other words, chinless Mitch McConnell doesn't even have to threaten to destroy what's left of the filibuster. Just do it with reconciliation. 51 votes. Hey, maybe Joe Manchin can vote for it too. And Heidi Heitkamp. Those iron-spined Democrats that they are. Beautiful, huh? So this thing may not be DOA in the Senate. This thing may have a chance of passing. Now, the Senate being the Senate, they're going to feel like they've got a God-given right to tinker with it. Which means it will have to go to a conference committee. Which means it would have to go back and be voted on again by the House, unless the Senate simply passes the House's bill and sends it on to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's desk. And there's a possibility of that. There's a possibility of that. Why? Because there is no threat to the Republican majority whatsoever in 2018. None. Really? The people of Alabama are going to rise up and throw out a Republican senator? Really? You think? The people of Tennessee are going to rise up and throw out Bob Corker? Wouldn't you need a viable candidate first? Maybe Harold Ford can run again. Harold, call me. You know, with the jungle drums beating in the background. The people of Texas are really going to rise up and throw out Ted Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Yeah. No. There's no threat to the Republican majority in the Senate. And so if what Mitch McConnell wants to do is see that bill on Trump's desk, it'll go to Trump's desk. Because one of the things that I saw bandied about online as I prepared for the program this evening was that Republicans voted for this knowing, knowing that it will die in the Senate. I am not nearly that much an optimist. Not by a long damn shot. I'm not willing to underestimate chinless Mitch McConnell to that degree. Carol Baker says, I object to the reference to the war on poverty. In any war, it assumes both sides have something with which to fight. When poor people are left with nothing more than a straw mat and threadbare clothes, that's not a war. It's genocide of our own people. And isn't that the truth? Yeah, this is like opposing a modern military with sticks and stones. We've actually got evidence for how that sort of thing works out. Now, whatever, it's possible you've got things to say on this issue that you are as furious, you are as angry, you're as disgusted as am I, and that opportunity is coming. I can't give adequate words to what I feel. I feel like I have a gun to my head. A real live gun. I have a gun to my head and no right to self-defense whatsoever. I have a gun to my head that was put there by Evan Jenkins in my particular case. Your The person who put the gun to your head will vary if you live in a district represented by a Republican. And there's not a blessed thing to be done about it. Except, perhaps, what? Pray? That's great for the folks who pray. Pray what? Pray that you won't feel the actual bullet? Pray that you'll go quick and not just be... Pray that he'll miss with the muzzle... Pray for what? And welcomed into eternal paradise? For what? I don't know. Law school, you probably heard some white-headed old scion of an ancient day of pleading say, equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. These are called equitable maxims. The race is not always to the swift, but that's the way equity bets. But that's one of those maxims. Equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. Where's the remedy? How do you provide health care to 24 million people who won't have it because it was stolen from them in order to give away a tax cut? Because, you see, there are layers, and there are layers, and there are layers. To this bloody piece of business that the Republicans perpetrated today. Oh, yes. Lots of layers. Let's see. Who had a good day today? I didn't have a good day. But you know what? If you're an individual who earns over $200,000 or a couple that earns more than $250,000, well, you just got a 0.9% increase on the Medicare payroll tax and a 3.8% tax on investment income wiped out. If you're in the upper middle class and you don't have a pre-existing health condition, and damned if I can figure out how that works, because as far as I can tell, life is a pre-existing condition. Well, you won today because the Merkin Health Care Act lets people have government subsidies up to about $150,000 a year. On the other hand, states can waive regulations on minimum benefit standards and rules that keep the insurance companies from gouging out higher prices to customers with pre-existing conditions. As the New York Times explains, that means overall the gap between the tax subsidies and the cost of needed care could widen even for some people who will get extra financial help. They also note that young middle-class people without pre-existing health conditions are big winners. People who don't want insurance are big winners because the individual mandate's gone. If it passes in the Senate and it's signed into law. Big employers, giant corporations, you just got a windfall because the employer mandate is gone. And hey, tanning bed manufacturers, making America great again. But if you're poor, you're fucked. And if you're older, in most of the states of the union, you're fucked. For instance, insurance companies, according to the New York Times article, could charge a 64-year-old customer five times the price charged to an 18-year-old one, to cite the most extreme example. The changes in the subsidy formula would also require older American middle-class citizens to pay a much larger share of their health insurance bill. They went to the floor for a vote without a Congressional Budget Office score, but the best evidence we have is that far fewer older Americans, you know, by older Americans, that's 45 and up, 50 for sure, will have insurance coverage under this than had it under the Affordable Care Act. If you have pre-existing conditions, you're screwed because of those aforementioned minimum benefit standard rules that can be waived by individual states like Mississippi, Stan, and Alabama. State Medicaid programs get bled pale. Hospitals lose. There are a lot of people. And here in West Virginia, there are a lot of people who've wandered around, you know, goddamn Obamacare, while they're getting a paycheck every 2 weeks from a clinic that was being funded by, you know, Obamacare. Well, they ain't going to have a job. And, of course, there's Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood doesn't get any federal money for 1 year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Winners and losers. If you ever find yourself in Belgium, there are certain little cemeteries, village cemeteries, and the older gravestones say back to, say, 1914. There are gravestones of men, women, children, and all it says is, all the gravestone will give is the name and the date, and it will simply say, Fusillé par les Allemands, shot by the Germans. Well, within the next year, there are some 29,000 people in the United States who may just as well have their name, their date of birth, their date of death, and then underneath it, killed by the Republicans, put on their stones. You might be one of them. I might be one of them. That's the exciting part about a Republican death lottery, you know? Not knowing. And before I take the break, one last thing, because it's funny how my brain works and how I think. Last week, I talked about the upcoming budget crisis, which, by the way, was the omnibus was passed today and sent to the Clementine Caligula's desk a day ahead of schedule. But I was talking about the fact that a promise was going to be broken to a generation of retired coal miners who were going to lose their health care and their pensions if some sort of an agreement wasn't reached. Well, the agreement was reached, and there's now a permanent fix for miners' health care. Good on them. So today, just out of an abundance of curiosity, I went to the official homepage of the United Mine Workers of America, many of whose members still live in West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, Southwest Virginia, Alabama, Northeast Tennessee, just to see, I didn't expect it to see it, but just to see if maybe there would be a statement on there about the necessity of leaving health care, the Affordable Care Act, the hell alone. Because, see, one of the things that goes away with the Affordable Care Act is the black lung clinics and the change in the methodology by which miners can get black lung benefits so that they know when they breathe their last, when they breathe out and do not breathe in again, that their widows will not be left in penury. That wasn't part of the health care benefits that got fixed. That's part of the Affordable Care Act. But I went to the website, like I said, to see if there would be a word there about leaving the Affordable Care Act alone and the necessity of rejecting this bill. There was not. It was a classic case of igumfu on the part of the United Mine Workers of America. All over this little state, this poor, little, beleaguered, poisoned, blasted, burnt, blown up, crippled, maimed, sick, dying state. Over the last few weeks, people have picked up their phones and called the likes of Evan Jenkins and Looney Mooney and Dave McKinley. And said, save the miners' health care and pensions. Because we're hillbillies. And we know what they've been through. We know the lives they've led. And it would be a manifest injustice to take away their health care from them. Save their health care. So I thought back to the long history of advocacy and activism of the UMWA and how in times past labor has been referred to as the birth mother of progressive activism. And I went to the website and I checked their Twitter timeline. Not a word. Not a word to their rank and file to call their congressman and tell them to leave the Affordable Care Act alone? Not a word. Now, this is the same UMWA that was born over a century ago out of a notion of a common struggle. This is the same United Mine Workers that once upon a time hewed toward the notion that a harm to one was a harm to all. Yeah, this is that United Mine Workers of America. The United Mine Workers that my father and grandfather fought and bled to bring into being. That the grandfathers, great-grandfathers, great-great-grandfathers of damn near just about everybody who's got more than a couple of generations behind them here in this state have as well. The union that was born out of the horrors of Monongah and Eccles. People blown to pieces and buried alive. The union that was born out of the out of the March on Logan. And the miniature civil war that started at Matewan. And not a peep, not a word from the United Mine Workers in support of the people who supported them. And so I've done my last for the UMWA. I'm done. If you expect the support of others as a matter of right, but in a time of crisis, no, we can't see anything of you but your fucking assholes and elbows, well, yeah, I'm really done. Because I don't hang out with the igum-foo crowd. I got mine. Fuck you. No. Because in circumstances as dire as these we face, a harm to one is a harm to all. On the other hand, and you might find this interesting. Yeah, I know, Hoghead pointing out in the chat room. That's the creed of the international workers of the world, industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies. But it was a socialist motto before that. And it was much heard in the coal fields of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. You know what's interesting, though? The UMWA was as silent as the tomb on other people's need for health care. But for all the grief that I've given them over the years, that, you know, in many ways they've earned, I give credit to the Sierra Club this evening. Because unlike the silent as a graven image United Mine Workers of America, the Sierra Club was out there trying to get its members to call, to beg, to cajole, to make their voices heard. While the United Mine Workers stood silent about the well-being of so many who had raised their voices in support of them.
Just, like I said, one last thing. One last thing worth considering. Where were you, Cecil? One day longer than the company, Cecil Roberts. Where were you when we needed you? Yeah, but see the UMWA couldn't send out a message to its rank and file because so many of its rank and file had been brainwashed that there was an Obama war on coal, and they hated that one in their White House. And they didn't want nothing to do with no Obamacare. They just wanted the health care they deserved. They'd have tarred and feathered Cecil Roberts if he had sent out an action alert telling the membership to stand up for those who had stood up for them. That's what that was. So it's 22 minutes past the hour, almost halfway done with this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I'm happy to say that thanks to Glenn, and thanks to Charlene, and Ralps, we're on the way toward meeting Sparky's Get It Back on the Road challenge. That's see what it's a $200 challenge, so $140 to go. $140 to go. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you so very much. Glenn also with a note says subject line pre-existing. How the fuck does anything pre-exist? Just by the sheer definition of existing, how do you pre-exist and be alive? Well, see, that's the beauty of legal mumbo-jumbo. It doesn't have to necessarily be rooted in reality, as long as you can slip it past a court. A condition that pre-existed the coverage. And all this baloney about how, well, you know, if somebody stays continuously covered, that's almost impossible. Yeah. All right. If you've got any thoughts you'd like to share on this or other issues, you're certainly welcome to bring them along. On the other hand, I've got plenty to fill a bobster on. I could probably go till midnight as long as my voice holds out. It's that interesting a day. You know how to reach the program if you want to. 304-574-8178. If you would like to reach the program via the stress line, works for some, not for others. Named after the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller, who would probably be having a conniption if he were still alive on a day like this. That number is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's how the magic works. That's why we call it conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a Thursday. So we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up. Stick around. We'll be back.
One, two, three. It's Thursday, May 4, 2017.
I think you'll see a market decline in solar installers, solar businesses, and people that are considering it.
Indiana governor signs bill to gut state's rooftop solar industry. Another coal mine tragedy, this time in Iran. Exxon ordered to pay $20 million for refinery pollution. Denmark moves to phase out renewable energy subsidies. Plus, Rhode Island town makes history as the first in the U.S. to be powered by offshore wind.
All of those history lessons and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You can't deny global warming is happening and then say, but don't call us stupid. That's the little dilemma I'm in.
What a stupid dilemma. This is your Green News Report.
Don't call me stupid. Well, then don't be stupid.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of stupid, we're keeping our eyes on the White House and their decision about whether or not they will become the shame of planet Earth by having the U.S. drop out of the landmark U.N. Paris Climate Agreement. Just incredible that they're even thinking about it, but they are, and we're keeping our eyes on that. Until that decision, what else do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first, in Iran, another fossil fuel tragedy. At least 21 miners were killed and dozens more injured in a coal mine explosion that sent 25 responders to a hospital. Officials say as many as 40 coal miners may still be trapped in the mine. Here in the U.S., in Indiana, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb on Tuesday signed legislation to phase out payments to homeowners who sell clean electricity back to the grid.
Unbelievable.
Indiana's powerful electric utility industry aggressively lobbied the state legislature to pass the bill to end net metering on new rooftop solar installations. It's attacked utilities seeking to block competition from rooftop solar. In an interview with WRS, one resident said the law is already impacting
solar panels on their roofs. And because people right now who put their orders for solar panels hold.
And remember, these are the champions of the free market who are doing clean solar, easier to burn dirty.
For violating the Clean Air Act more than 16 times over a five-year period.
Really?
At its Baytown, Texas refinery, located 25 miles east of Houston. Environment Texas, which brought the lawsuit over the pollution, described the fine as, quote, the largest penalty resulting from a citizen suit in U.S. history.
Well, they only violated it 16,000 times?
Yeah. In Alaska, good news for polar bears. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday refused to hear a case on the federal government's decision to designate more than 187,000 square miles in Alaska as critical habitat for threatened polar bears. That means a decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect large swaths of Alaska's coast and waters will stand. Also in Alaska, the Natural Resources Defense Council filed suit in federal court on Wednesday to block President Trump's executive order to lift a ban on offshore drilling in parts of the Arctic and the Atlantic Oceans, areas that had been protected by President Obama last year. The suit alleges that lifting the ban violates federal law. NRDC and the law firm Earth Justice filed the complaint on behalf of a coalition of indigenous Alaskan tribes who will be most impacted by offshore drilling. Meanwhile, the nation of Denmark will soon phase out subsidies for wind energy because its industry no longer needs them. The nation is now on target to have all of its energy needs met by renewables by 2050. The Danish energy minister said it's a development he could not have imagined as recently as last year. The nation is now on target to have all of its energy needs met by renewables by 2050.
That's very good news. Wow, good story.
Here in the U.S., the City Council of Atlanta has unanimously approved a measure to source 100% of its electricity from renewable energy. It's the 27th city in the U.S. and the first in Georgia to make the commitment.
Also a good story.
Finally, just 10 months after starting construction, America's first ever offshore wind farm is now generating clean electricity off the coast of Rhode Island. On Monday, May 1st, Block Island, Rhode Island, shut down its small diesel power plant forever. And after a moment of silence, switched on the new 5-turbine Block Island wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island, the first offshore wind farm in the U.S. In a statement, officials said, quote, "The silence was symbolic. for saving nearly 1 million gallons of diesel fuel annually.
Too much good news. I don't know what I'm going to do. Thank you. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh. And when the sun is out, I've got...
when the sun is out. Right. Did I mention that over the weekend we're expecting snow here? Because we are. Right. Mm-hmm. I wish I was kidding. For those of you who are having trouble getting the stream, and you can't hear me if you are, God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm a broadcaster, not an engineer, Jim. I wish I knew what was causing it. I saw it happen during the Green News Report, and then hopefully it will come back, and it's just more of that internet weather that I keep hearing about. Going to the phones here in a second. Note coming in from Carol Baker. Good friend of mine. I mean, this is the reality, okay? This is the reality of what the Republicans did today. A good friend of mine who's relied on Obamacare is going from Virginia to the Cleveland Clinic for her life-saving open-heart surgery on Monday. She sat down today to write her health directive and dissolved into tears with the news of the Obamacare repeal. She said there's no fucking point in writing this down. If they get this through the Senate, it's a death sentence for me. My life doesn't matter to them. Well, it fucking matters to me. I've been sending her $500 a month to keep her lights on and food in the fridge. Blue lives matter. Rich lives matter. As Carol says, I'd like to know when the poor lives are going to matter. As Carol says, and I pointed out, you know, Carol doesn't have health care. Like so many of us in this community. She said, I, meanwhile, have no health care myself. That's right. I determined long ago my life doesn't matter much to anyone. But I have a job and I eat. That's more than she has. By the way, I lost the feed. I don't even feel like turning on the reverb and talking about the greatest history country in the history of the world on earth and the universe now today forever. Amen. I know it's going to come as a terrible surprise to the Republicans. But there's not a hell of a lot to be proud of in this country right now. Not much at all. A country that shits on its oldest, shits on its youngest, and shits on its poorest. Well, it's hard not to look at that country and figure that it's pretty much circling the drain. Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Judith. Thank you very much. We are down to $120 to go on Sparky's challenge. The Get Bob Back on the Road challenge. Thank you, Sparky, and thank you, Judith. $120 more, and hopefully that'll knock it all down. Let's go over and talk to John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
You know. How about you?
Well, not very good, man. I'm pretty pissed off. I mean, This shit is ridiculous. I mean, like, well, first I want to correct Steve. It was actually the Democrats that were just saying, hey, goodbye. And the reason they did it was because they're under the impression, which I'm not so convinced, that this is going to cost them their seats. And I don't think that that's the case because people have a really short memory. You could tell.
Well,
people,
and the gerrymandering and the voter suppression, it doesn't add up to very good odds. But I will note, John, that there seems to be a split of opinion. The BBC says it was the Republicans.
Oh, really? Oh, well, I don't know. Okay. Well, I just heard it from I just saw from a couple of sources that they said Democrats were doing it.
And, that's what I saw too. That's what I saw too. But it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
It makes sense that these soulless, heartless, motherless Republicans would celebrate and do an end zone dance on the floor of the House of Representatives, John, at the prospect of stealing health care from 24 million American people.
I think a lot of people have to come to the terms that these Republicans are evil. I mean, I know that's a religious term, but they act like they're Christians and stuff. I guarantee you, Bob, that a lot of them don't even believe in God or Christ, and they despise the idea of a deity. You know what I mean? Because money is what they worship. It's wealth, power, that's what they worship. I don't believe that many of them, like for Ted Cruz, for example, I could just tell that guy just does not believe in God. And the reason is because, and that's why, I don't know what the reason is, but the reason that I think that is because I just think they act like that just to get votes. I really do. I do not believe because they don't display any signs of being a Christian.
And that's why they get caught in Walmart parking lots trying to pick up boys to play slap and tickle with, and why they go through the liquor store through the back door.
Yeah. Well, you know that they were seen loading up kegs of beer or something coming out of the Capitol building or something like that that I saw. And then there's people.
Yeah, they're having an intergalactic kegger celebrating the 24 million people who won't have health care.
Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting. I left a message on my representative's phone. And to be honest with you, I'm not going to lie. I was screaming. I mean, I was telling him, you know, to go fuck off, to suck the orange pile of shit dick, all that kind of stuff. Man, I lost it. I'm pissed off. All because they don't want a Negro's name on a health care bill that helps people out. They want to take everything that Obama did away. If they could, they would erase him from the history book.
I was about to say the very same thing, John. If they could engage in the ancient Roman practice of damnatio memoria, they would do that. They would erase his name from every piece of legislation. They would go into the archives and remove his signature from every bill. Everything that he ever touched, the fact that he even existed, would be damned from memory.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if they stay in power, shit like that's going to happen. I mean, and these Trump, like, you know how you said about Ivanka being the next president? At first I thought, well, maybe not the next president, but I do believe that I did, when you said that, I did believe, and I thought about that too before you mentioned it, that they're grooming her to be the first woman president, and she will be the first woman president. I will bet things on it, you know, but, I have a feeling that you may be right about her succeeding her father. And you know what that is then? That's a goddamn dictatorship. Monarchy is what that would really turn into.
Well, and remember all the little, all the little sparkle ponies who hollered, Clinton Dynasty, Clinton Dynasty. Oh, Jesus, Clinton Dynasty. I wonder what they're going to holler when it's Ivanka.
Yeah, probably nothing, you know. Here's the thing.
Well, she's purdy.
Right, exactly. Here's the thing about those people. You know who didn't show up to any of the climate marches at all? Well, I'll give you a guess. Her first name rhymes with, let's say, kill, and her last name rhymes with spine. I don't think that she was at any of the marches. Now, somebody can correct me if they find you know, somewhere where she was at for the climate marches, but she wasn't. And she, you know, I kind of liked the guy that ran for the Green Party before her. I think he ran in, like, 2008. He actually went around the country campaigning saying, if you live in a safe state, like a solid red or solid blue state, by all means, vote for me. But if you live in a swing state, for the love of God, vote for Barack Obama. You know? And it worked because Obama got elected and he didn't spoil the vote. And that's just a little tidbit about, and I'm not trying to bash Jill's, like, green voters. I'm not, you know, I'm just saying that, by the way, I don't think I saw her name come up in any of the climate march stuff. Just saying. So, I mean, just proves that you don't give a shit.
All right, here's what you do, John. While the odds are still high, get your bet in on Ivanka as first woman president. If you've got a friend in the UK or something, there's a UK betting parlors will take bets on anything. Okay.
Okay.
Put $20 down on Ivanka first woman president and get yourself some, you know, 500-1 odds. It'll be a nice little payday.
Yeah, because I truly believe it will happen. And this country is stupid enough to do it. There's, you know, I'm sorry. I think we live in a stupid country. And if you talk to people who live in other countries, they all know it. They all know that America's stupid. And they know that we're not going to be the world's superpower for much, much longer because we elect dumbasses who are destroyers. That's all they are. They don't care about governing. They care about destroying. And no, like I got pre-existing conditions, you know. I do have health insurance through my employer. So even if the pre-existing conditions wasn't on the chopping block, I would be speaking out against this because it's
not to make matters worse for you, John, but let's be clear about something. You've got health insurance through your employer now. What happened with this bill today is not only the individual mandate goes away, the employer mandate goes away.
I know.
So if the only reason you have health insurance through your employer is because your employer felt compelled to provide insurance because of the employer mandate, I'm sorry, but you're out here with the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. I know. And you see, if the Republicans had any decency, what they would do is get with the Democrats, say, look, we want to make some changes to this bill. Can you work with us on it? And then they'll say, and then if the Democrats refuse to work with them, then they can say, okay, but we have the votes to repeal it. You know, and then that would, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying that's ideal. I'm just saying if they had any decency. But these people, like there was a bunch of Republicans that were going to vote against it and backed out at the very last minute, one of which was Representative Scott Perry, who is my representative in my district, and he did that. He pulled that shit. You know damn well he was. My dad was saying earlier that he was probably going to vote for it anyway, but he just did that for theatric, you know, to make his constituents, because he got a lot of pushback. I talked to one of the staffers today. They said they got a lot of phone calls for it from it. And, you know, because I was calling about this shit. Because I'm one of those people that calls my representative. I got my representative. I got both my senators and my rep phone numbers for both D.C. and the local office, which I do the local office. The D.C. office is just if I want to call them up and just start bitching at them about shit like this, you know. But, you know, I got that shit on speed dial in my phone.
You might find this interesting. I was trying to reach out to Evan Jenkins today, John. And I had all of his phone numbers in front of me, his local office numbers, his D.C. number. And I tried them all. You know that that you get? We're sorry. All circuits are busy at this time. Please try back later. That's what I got trying to call his D.C. office. Is Beckley
disconnected?
Yeah, his Beckley office rang until voicemail picked up. After a while, I finally got through to his Huntington office, and I said, "Ma'am,
you tell Congressman Jenkins that it is unconscionable that he would vote to take away health care from 213,000 people. She said, so you're for his vote for the bill? I said, no, ma'am.
Really?
Really.
See, this is the shit I'm talking about. That's the, like, sleight of, well, not sleight of hand, but, like, that's the shit that they pull. They act like, they seriously act like nobody's against anything they do. They keep saying, like, I think you had some clips yesterday of a couple of fucking wing nuts still going on about this trade protest stuff. And I gotta tell you, people were organizing, and where I'm at right now in Foxville, Pennsylvania. People were organizing. I was canvassing on Saturday for a local candidate who's running as a Democrat, which is, you know, you're going into some uncharted territory when you're running as a Democrat where I'm at for locally. And so what we did was we had a walk list of all registered Democrats because we're getting ready for the primary. And a lot of people, we talked to a lot of these people that are Democrats. And, I mean, now, don't get me wrong. Some of them were good guys fearing upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals, you know.
You do that very well.
Yeah, I got that shit. Because, you see, I got that. I think it's so, I think it's hilarious, man. So I got that down, and I say it to people, you know. You know, it's cool. I like it. But it's interesting. But, you know, but they were against Trump, though, and they're angry, you know. But the point is, there's a lot of people who are organizing. I'm talking to these people, and they're not paid protesters. They're not being paid by people. I don't know why they're pushing that bullshit lie. I think it's because they know people are organizing. They know it's not true, a lot of them, and they know that people are organizing, and they're scared of that. They've seen what happened with the Tea Party. They were involved with the Tea Party, most of them. They know how that kind of movement can be effective, but I don't know if it will this time though, because like you said, gerrymandering, voter suppression,
there's one more thing too, and that is the Democratic Party has a bench problem. We don't have a bench. I'm using a sporting analogy here. We've got our starting nine, our starting 11, our starting five, and then it's over. And so even in districts where people are just incensed over what's been done to them, it's hard to find somebody to oppose him. Sparky, for instance, was telling me before the program that Doug LaMalfa, his congressman there in Northern California, his Facebook page is swamped in people who are just furious with him for that vote.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is there's really nobody in it. Or take, for instance, Devin Nunez in, what is it, the 22nd in California? There's nobody who's ready to run for Congress there. I mean, we've got somebody who has announced, you can't file to run for office until January of next year here in West Virginia.
Okay.
We've got somebody who says they're going to run against Joe Manchin in the primary. This person knows nothing about politics. This person has one issue. Barely knows how a bill gets through Congress.
Oh, then that person is not going to do well in the primary.
Well, and the thing is, if we do get somebody who knows any of that and could primary him, that'll just be a vote drain. Which, of course, is exactly what I predicted with regard to Joe Manchin all along. Joe Manchin's re-election was secured by health care for the miners. And the fact that he's making noises with his mouth eater about how it would be wrong to take health care away from West Virginians. But even without that, what would have happened is, and I've seen things like people saying,
Well, what we need to do is get a West Virginia celebrity to run against him. Maybe get Jennifer Garner to come back here and run against him. And even under the best of circumstances, what happens, you get a good progressive challenger in the primary, and then you get, and then Joe just calls in a couple of favors, and you get two or three more people to file, and Joe doesn't win a majority, but Joe comes out with enough of a plurality to make it to the general, and then Joe wins.
That's kind of what happened with Trump. I mean, I know a lot of states he won in a landslide in the primary, but there's a lot, I think they said the majority of states, at least at the beginning, he wasn't even getting the actual majority vote.
He lost Iowa.
Compared to everybody. Right, exactly. Stuff like that, you know, and that's kind of, that's how they do that. But with Joe Manchin, see, he more or less like a Republican in like Democrats clothing, sort of, you know, I mean, I know for a fact his daughter isn't no damn Democrat. That woman that runs the, I don't know for a fact, but I...
Oh, you're talking about Heather Bresch?
Yeah.
Yeah, the pharmaceutical magnate, Ms. EpiPen 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, she blamed all that shit on Obamacare. You know what I mean? So why would her dad vote against this new repeal bill? You know, so it's... Oh, before I forget, though, did you know that they're adding pregnancy as... Or not pregnancy, but rape victims as pre-existing condition?
Sure.
I'm not sure if...
And remember, before the Affordable Care Act, pregnancy was a pre-existing condition.
Right, and being a C-section baby, too.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, you know, and you know, hey, I'm sorry, you were born from a C-section. You're a pre-existing condition in the cradle.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be anything that they deem a pre-existing. It's all they got to do is deem... this is ridiculous. I mean... for people, like a Trump supporter said to me the one time, I said, we need single-payer health care. He said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And then what did I say to him? I said, there's no such thing as a free wall. Because it was right around the time where they were debating about us paying, that we were going to end up footing the bill for that stupid fucking wall. So stupid. You know, there's people, there's border officers that are, like, pissed off about the wall, saying that, like, they're like, what the hell? We do a good job of keeping people from coming across this border. You know what I mean? Like, we work hard. And this guy's saying that we need a wall to replace us, even though it wouldn't replace them, but still. You know, there's border officers, believe it or not, that are pissed off about it. And a lot of them are Mexican heritage, which doesn't really matter because, well, plenty of Mexicans voted for him. Maybe not the majority, but plenty of them, more than should have. I'm so upset right now. I'm so ashamed of this country. And it's we're like, for progressives and Democrats and liberals, this is the worst state of politics I think we've ever had for progressives. I mean, it's the worst, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, I got to maintain something resembling hope. I know. Hope in one hand and in the other, and see which one fills up first. Sure.
It's always darkest before dawn.
But, you know, dadgummit, it's hard not to agree with you. I mean,
I know where
I live. Okay. And don't think for a minute that today's executive order was not done with an eye toward 2018 and 2020, okay? Now, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical pastors have been flaunting the IRS rule for years. It's very seldom that the IRS steps in and actually takes a gospel sharp to task. In fact, one of the few cases I can remember where they did, it was actually a progressive church in San Diego.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're pretty.
Meanwhile, they stand in the pulpits around here and they say, Barack Obama is the Antichrist.
It says right there in Flip-Floppian 69:69, and lo, yea, verily, he shall come to you, and he shall say many great and groovy things, and he shall be black, and his name shall be Obama, and death will ride with him. And they and the faithful just LARP it up.
Yeah.
And remember, you know, you can't swing a run over possum in this state without hitting a church. So the whole point will be to allow, and the beautiful thing about having a church tell you what your politics have to be, is that they can tie what happens to you after you're dead to how you vote, which is cheating.
Yeah.
Which is cheating. You know, well, you know, I'd hate to be you standing before the pearly gates telling St. Peter you voted for that Negro.
Oh,
I mean, I just wouldn't want to do that. I mean, I want my name wrote in the Lamb's Book of Life, and you can't have your name wrote in the Lamb's Book of Life if you ever voted for anybody that supports tearing poor little innocent fetuses out of the womb.
And they would pull that argument out too.
Obama eats baby. Baby what? Baby.
Well, you know, Jones was saying shit like that. Like, that, or not that he eats babies, or what did he say about him? It was a while ago, like years ago. He said something about Obama eating, sacrificing. No, I didn't know what it was. He was sacrificing babies or some shit like that.
Well, how many good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals do you think believed the ping-pong, Comet ping-pong Pizzagate bullshit? Hint. A lot.
And
I'm not talking about the decent Christians like your liberation theology Catholics and your Episcopalians and whatnot. Your nice Methodists, not the crazy ones. Yeah, I'm talking about your evangelicals. And they are the majority of Christians in this country.
Oh yeah, overwhelming.
I mean, I wish there was a Unitarian church in within 20 miles of me or so. I might show up there every once in a while. Welcome. I love the Unitarians. In years now, I've tried my hand at walking into the church that my family helped eons ago. Who no. I mean,
that bad.
Oh, got the devil in me, but I couldn't hardly stand to hear the word of the Lord, at least not the Lord the way they interpret it. Oh, glory, we've got to save our community from the Homer sectionals. Really?
Yeah, exactly. Well, does it say no? Actually, when did Jesus Christ? I mean, I'm
ooh,
I'm,
pick me.
Been a long time.
I take never for a thousand.
Right. Is it, it's in the Bible? Or he said it?
No, Jesus didn't say anything about gay people. He made passing reference of the Greco-Roman Near East who participated in a ritual, and this is going to get your legs all close up, scrunched up real close together when I tell you about it. I think it was the acolytes of the goddess Cybele. Cybele. And if you really, really wanted to be a priest of Cybele, what you had to do when they come around to the festival days of Cybele, it was kind of like a race. And everybody in the race had a knife. And what you did is you ran up. If you really wanted to be a priest of Cybele, you ran up to an open door of somebody's house and you cut your own nuts off and you threw them inside the door, and then they were obliged, the people in the house, if they were home, were obliged to take you in, mend your wounds, keep you from bleeding to death, and then you got to be a priest of Cybele.
For real, though?
For real.
Now, what the fuck?
Now, try to imagine having, you know, now you don't have to cut off Big Jim, just the twins. So you've just lopped the twins off. How good is your aim going to be?
Yeah, right.
Because see, there's an economy of scale at work here too, John. And if you threw your nutsack and you missed the open door and say splattered him against the wall, nobody had to come out and take care of you, and you just stood there and bled to death in the streets. Because there can only be so many priests of Cybele.
Right. Okay.
And that was proof that the goddess had rejected you. So in the Gospels,
if you didn't pass out,
bleed to death. and so there was there's a reference in the Gospels to where Jesus talks about people who were born eunuchs or make themselves eunuchs.
Really? So that wasn't his idea.
But that has nothing to do with sexuality.
Yeah, nothing at all. Well, you said before. Now I was wondering. This is a perfect time to ask this. I think I was always wondering, like when you say Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant,
semi-literate itinerant rabbi.
Okay, I was wondering if you could break that down a bit, like. Because was he really Palestinian? And
yeah, the whole area was Palestine.
And it was called that at the time?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, it was Palestina.
Oh, okay. And that's where Nazareth was, huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's interesting.
His real name was Yeshua. He came from the province of Palestine. The word technon in Greek that many people mistranslate as carpenter, you know, the idiots that drive around with a bumper sticker that says, my boss is a Jewish carpenter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, that's more properly translated as day laborer or worker, unskilled laborer. He'd be like the guys who hang out in the Home Depot parking lot and get work every day going and cutting some white guy's lawn or painting his walls or, you know, day laborers. Okay, so Yeshua the brown-skinned, because he was brown-skinned, I mean, ain't no white folks over there. Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate, he would know just enough words to be able to dope out a few lines of the Torah in order to get past his bar mitzvah, semi-literate, itinerant rabbi. So he didn't have a synagogue. He was just a wandering teacher.
Okay.
And Nazareth didn't even qualify as a muddy little dirt spot on the map. The nearest place of any significance that he lived was Sephora, if, of course, he was real at all, and that's open to debate. And Sephora was a Hellenistic Greek city of considerable learning.
Okay. So, like, that thing about his being born to a virgin has to be, well, bullshit then.
Yes, it absolutely is. The earliest books of the Bible, and I'm sorry for those who hate this stuff, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but I answer questions here. The earliest books of the Bible are not the Gospels. They are the letters of Saul, Paul. Okay? And they come from around 40, 50 CE. You don't get the first Gospels until Matthew, Mark, and Luke. You don't get the first of those, Mark, until maybe 90 CE. And John is just, and John, the most mystical of the four Gospels, is just, woo, out there. And that doesn't come around until 125, 130, 135 CE. The author of John didn't
ever even know anybody who knew Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. And so the reason I mention all of this is the earliest books of the Bible are the Pauline letters, and Paul never not once at all mentions the virgin birth. Now, you'd think that a virgin birth would be a pretty big damn deal. I mean, hell, it'd be a big deal today, right? I mean, we publish news stories about parthenogenesis and fucking dolphins, because it happens. We know now from scientific inquiry that seahorses can change, and other animals as well, can change gender based upon population pressures. We've never seen human beings do that.
Yeah, until we get the monkeys that Alex Jones is talking about.
Well, yeah, the rhesus. You know, I got to stop talking about that because I dreamed of them last night. Oh, God. And,
really?
And the monkey talked, too. Oh,
what?
Someday monkey, oh, no, man, play piano song. Play piano song.
Bob, you got to stop thinking about Alex Jones then.
Well, I wasn't. I mean, this stuff just gets unpacked in my subconscious at night.
What were you talking about, monkey's family that you wanted when you were a kid?
Oh, the sea monkeys?
Was that like a toy?
Sea monkeys.
Yeah.
Dude. Okay, can I just ask, John, how old are you?
27.
Okay, I mean, I'm not, this is not me making fun, okay? I just wanted to know. It's because there are... There are cultural references, and no, you probably never saw sea monkeys. But you can look them up. What they were brine shrimp eggs. It was little pouches of brine shrimp eggs. But the graphics were so cool because the sea monkeys sort of had this Dr. Seuss look about them. And they were down there in their little sea monkey kingdom, and they had their little sea monkey crowns, and there were little sea monkey princes and princesses, sea monkeying around. And you know, like I said, if you have any, if you've got any imagination, that just woo and you're gone. And it was a 4 or 5 year battle of my parents absolutely refusing to give in on sending 75 cents in on a coupon in the back of a goddamn comic book to get a package of fucking sea monkeys.
Well, 75 cents back then was probably what, like, today's money, maybe.
Yeah, well, see, that's the battle they won. The battle they lost was video games.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
because
were you in the Atari age?
Well, yeah, but more importantly, I wait a minute. John, I come from the arcade age.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Where you could walk in there with $20 worth of quarters, walk out with not a penny in your pocket, nothing to show for it, but maybe you'd gotten a little bit better at William's Defender. The ultimate of all side scrollers. And when those little little hyperactive little Martian bastards came down, me, and you know, you couldn't get a bead on them, and they were just going and blow you, game over.
Was this the '80s?
Oh, it was so the '80s. It was so the '80s.
So Atari was out by then, though, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, Pong and stuff like that. That was out in the '70s. Yeah, we played that. We played that in all friends' living rooms. You know, boop.
Wow!
Boop.
Can you imagine? Kids today would be so bored with that.
Well, no, you know, I actually read a story about a guy, and I was kind of fascinated by it. It was a year or so ago. Everything was a year or so ago.
When everything was normal.
No, about a year or so ago, I read a story about a guy who, you know, his son was born, and he was, you know, and as soon as the kid got old enough, he started him out on the very earliest game platforms, Pong. And he was working him up through the game platforms because he wasn't just going to let him have the pleasure of starting out with all this 3D augmented reality, virtual reality. No. And apparently at like the age of 6, this kid was a freaking Jedi sensei at Pong.
and you move from Pong.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and you move from Pong to Breakout. And from Breakout, you go to Space Invaders.
So he started him out on Atari, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. So that he didn't have to, so his kid knew, well, so that, how can I put this? So that his kid could learn the ropes on a more, well, I don't want to say primitive, but more like an older system so that he wasn't too spoiled right away. With the crazy shit they have out now in games.
Right, yeah.
Because these kids, man, they don't know.
Well, and like, even our eldest daughter has warm fuzzy feelings about Earthworm Jim and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, I loved Earthworm Jim. I loved Earthworm Jim, man. That was a great
okay,
was
yeah,
because awesome.
You're pretty close in age, John.
How old is she then?
Within a couple of years of you.
Oh, okay. Well, she's in her 20s yet. That's, dang, man. I didn't know that. I thought she had kids and everything.
Oh, she does.
Oh, okay. Cool. Sorry, I mean, I'm not trying to pry.
But her first video game exposure was Sonic the Hedgehog and Earthworm Jim. And yes, I love Earthworm Jim.
Oh, yeah. Sonic the Hedgehog, too. That was a good game. You're talking Sega then, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know your platforms, John. And you know what? Bless your heart for this because you're kind of pulling me up out of the funk that I was in. It's fun.
Oh yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it's fun to it's fun to get outside and you know what? It works. It's working in the chat room too because Barkway just said. My brothers and I played Pong for hours.
Oh yeah.
She said that's why I laugh when kids today think us older folks are technophobes. Hell, we started the craze and improved it to where it is today.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, VT Blom with a reference in the chat room to Frogger.
Yeah, Frogger. Yeah. I love that shit.
Man. Now I tell you, I enjoyed the hell out of and played a lot. And this was an arcade. Pump a quarter into the game, into the machine game. Choplifter. It was a side scroller too.
What platform was that on?
No, this was just a put a quarter in video game.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it was a side scroller and. You had to go along and shoot bad guys, but the bad guys had also captured good guys who were running around down on the ground, and periodically you would have to land and let the good guys run and get on your choplifter and your chopper, and you'd have to fly them back to base and then fly back and keep rescuing hostages. At the same time, trying not to friendly fire the hostages.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, that was fun. And this conversation would not be complete without mention, of course, of the one that just changed everything, and that was Ms. Pac-Man. Pac-Man got the ball rolling, but Ms. Pac-Man, that's when it got intense.
Oh yeah, they still got games coming out about Pac-Man. I mean, you could go on your phone, you can go on your phone and download apps and everything with like all kinds of new nifty Pac-Man.
And see, the arcade games were still pretty much a going concern by the time I got to law school. And that's 1987, and there was another one of those everything changes moments with Tetris.
Yeah, Tetris.
Yep. Watching
crazed.
Watching drunk people in bars play Tetris.
Still do it. I think I saw a Tetris game in a bar not too long ago, actually. They had a couple of arcade games in there. Some of which I can't believe some still have that, but
Well, no, I know a couple of bars around here that still have arcade games, but they've been through so many fixes, and you know, there were a lot of counterfeit arcade games. And you'd think it was,
really?
but it wouldn't behave the same way. Yeah. Barquay says, "Hey Bob, tell John I have a Nintendo Switch. I love Zelda."
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's another
game. Is that a new thing?
Game Boy. Anybody? Game Boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, yeah. They had a little Sega Game Boy type thing before, I remember, and I used to play the Pokemon games on there when I was young.
Yeah, see, I was too heavily invested in the architecture and environment of Game Boy to get involved with because the Sega was definitely a slicker looking machine.
Yeah, well, I remember playing Mario on Sega.
Oh, I got a reference here from Les though. Sega's Afterburner game in the arcade. It was a first-person flyer, and it came with a motorized pitching seat. Les says, "I dumped rolls of quarters into that game." Yeah, because you're flying in a supersonic jet.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's one of them seat games. Yeah, yeah.
And there was another one called Firefox. After the Clint Eastwood movie.
Oh, okay. You mean Empty Seat Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, that Clint Eastwood. But it was a first person looking out the front of the cockpit flyer too, and it was awesome. Hey John, this has been a remarkably refreshing sort of pick me up of a conversation. I really appreciate it. And
me too. I don't want to tie up the lines, so I'll hop off of here. But yeah, just to everybody in the community, just the dark. It's always darkest before the dawn, and we gotta fight. I mean, this is just another reason that we have to fight people, that we have to organize. I mean, there's people organizing in my area. If it makes anybody feel better, there is people that are organizing, and it's for real. And we are really trying to get local progressives to be in local elected positions, even if it takes a couple of cycles to get there. We're going to get there.
I hope so. And the only alternative is just to lay around and let them kill us. So
yeah, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to.
Speaking of things of a bygone era, there's a poster from the hippy dippy 70s. That called the last great act of defiance, and it's a little mouse standing on the desert floor with his middle finger raised at an eagle that's screeching down to just, you know, kill his ass.
Nice. And that's us right now, except we're not going to get killed by them. I mean, I understand that the reality is that people are going to die because of this, but we're going to fight. I mean, not if we can help it. Man, you know, it's disgusting. I can't believe these people are actually happy and celebrating killing people. It's crazy. They're psychotic. So
they are.
Can't wait to hear what Malloy has to say about it.
Indeed. I'll be tuned in. Hey, John, you take care.
Yeah. You too, Bob.
All right. Later. My buddy John calling from Central PA. And that was a nice little digression. Thank you. Thank you, John. Note coming in from David the Angry Architect. Wonder Boy. But don't forget pinball. More coinage spent on pinball in the 80s for me. Oh, I spent a fortune on pinball. And we'd come up here in the summers in the August heat because Dad would time out his vacation down at the furnace to coincide with the traditional miner's vacation up here. That way he could get together with all his old friends and nobody'd have to go to work. And it was one of the few times that he would concede on his argument about the stupidity of pouring quarters into pinball machines. And this town still had a little pool hall beer joint with pinball machines in it, and the local kids would be allowed to go in there and play the pinball machines too. And I poured quarter after quarter into that pinball machine. I think it was Mata Hari. Was the name of the pinball machine. And one of my fonder bonding moments with my father, because that had been his pool hall as a kid, and it was one of those if these walls could talk kind of things. And he would sit there. He'd shoot pool with me, try to teach me to shoot pool. But he hated the pool tables that you put a quarter into because you couldn't get your scratches back. So what the hell kind of game is this where you can't get your scratches back? You're not supposed to. You shouldn't be able to win by scratching. Or, you know, with scratches. Randy in PA says, ever play Berserk and get good enough to turn the crank and get clobbered? I never got that good. Robert in Australia says, I watched a documentary about the inventors of Pong. It was called Ping Pong here in Oz because Pong is slang for smell. They put a test machine in a local tavern. The owner called them a day later to tell them it was broken. It wasn't. The money box was so full and coins had jammed in the slot. P.S. If anyone's interested in old video games, Google Pico 8. Oh, and I forgot. Oh, what was... Early game for computers. Zork. Dear God. You'd start playing Zork right after dinner, and the next thing you know, the sun would be coming up. Oh, my God. Yeah. So we are at about the half... we've got about a half hour to go in the program. Sparky's challenge, Sparky's, for God's sakes, get Bob's car back on the road challenge, is on the table. To the tune of $200, we've got $120 to go on that. I would, it would be really nice if that challenge could be met, and I thank Sparky very much for putting it out, because, you know, this isn't a matter of just, you know, paying the monthly bills. This is unforeseen expenses that they talk about on the floors of Congress sometimes. And I'm well and truly screwed. Because, you know, we're a one-vehicle family. And I can't just go out and, you know, buy a new one. So, if we could meet that challenge, it would be extremely helpful. And thanks to everybody so far who has taken steps to meet the challenge. Thank you. Hey, let's go and let's check in and see what Will in Chicago's up to. Hey, Will.
Well, can you hear me?
I'm working on it. Go ahead.
No problem. Is this better?
Yeah. I mean, I've got you. I've got you boosted here.
No problem. I noticed I got on Skype that my mic was silent. Was relatively quiet. Unfortunately, some of our Congress critters aren't. Well, I try to look at the bright side of things because I choose to have hope, which in a difficult world is sometimes a hard choice. But, one, the Republicans only won by a margin of 4 votes. They are very vulnerable in the Senate on this issue, particularly if a lot of the groups opposed to it, such as the AARP, the AMA, others mobilize. And there's even been comments from a few senators, they think that this likely won't pass, but Trump will take any victory they can at this point, or anything he can to avoid distractions from old financial connections, ties to Putin, and anything else. So I think we have to remember it's not lost. But if this does come in, people who rely on the ACA for things like blood pressure bills and life-saving medications will be screwed. I mean, I'm actually glad that California is looking at single payer since we might have to go with the states. And ironically, I'm planning after the paycheck I get tomorrow to send out for a California license because of the state of education in Chicago and in Northwest Indiana, meaning I might not have enough connections. But I look at it this way. Now's the time you put pressure on your senators and you recall in the future who voted which way in this House vote. I'm surprised that there were 20 Republicans who didn't vote. They might have gotten the blessing of Paul Ryan because their districts are a bit bad or they're retiring. But guess what? I can't trust a GOP which believes that Paul Ryan is an ideas guy when his ideas can best be described as a mishmash of Ayn Rand and extreme conservative Christianity.
Don't forget the Milton Friedmanism there.
Oh yes, well I throw in Milton Friedman under the banner of Ayn Rand, since pretty much I think that if she had told him, please dive into an active volcano, he would have said, sure. But I mean, we have to remember, the GOP is now essentially the party of business and by business, and perhaps half to charitably a third of the Democrats are leaning that way, and this is why we have to take action locally. I mean, precinct captains supporting some good candidates. Not everywhere are you going to have good candidates, but we have to remember we still have some power in this system, although there are moves afoot to try to change that, particularly with voter checks and other obstacles put in the way of allowing people to vote. But we have to remember we are not powerless, and if we give in to despair, that's kind of what the Koch brothers are banking on.
Sure they are. They're banking on that.
Yeah, quite literally, because they figure, well, if people feel miserable and oppressed, they'll just tune into American Idol or whatever its replacement is and other things and just be drudges. But the problem that they fail to see is there's too many people who have access to information and are willing to act.
What you're describing, Will, is a situation in which, and frankly, the black community, oh God, I can't believe I even use a phrase like that, but it's the shorthand, is well familiar.
Yep.
Because of things like voter suppression and gerrymandering, we have to work twice as hard to be equally successful.
Right. This is why, although the Democratic candidate got 3 million more votes, because of the vagaries of gerrymandering and how districts are laid out and the ancient electoral college, we had the candidate with the least amount of votes for the second time in my lifetime take up residence at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But at least with George W. Bush, some of the people around him knew what they were doing because they had been old hands in the White House and the establishment. I'm curious if when during the first 100 days they actually found out where the bathroom keys were. Because, yes, hopefully they did spend good money on janitorial services. But I mean, the African-American community is indeed familiar with voter and gerrymandering because those tactics have that we are all in this together. I think our progressive side of the spectrum is too often we just label ourselves as I'm supporting this issue. Guess what? Even though I live very far from Appalachia, I am concerned with what goes on there. My hope is that people like yourself in Appalachia are concerned with a set of people who are working in star interest. Will it be easy to change things? Hell no. Do we have to? Not really. Because someone who called in quipped, Trump has a solution to global warming. Do you know what that is? Nuclear winter.
Oh, Jesus.
The fact that we have people joking about this shows you what an incompetent lot we have. So it's up to us to save ourselves. One thing I've learned is not to look out for political messiahs. Why? People can be stopped. And sadly, we've seen a lot of them who did try to make a different stop. But ideas and movements are much harder to destroy. So that's why I think we have to really.
Well, that's a fair observation, Will. Let me ask you something. Do you think that the Trump phenomenon qualifies or constitutes a movement? Or is it more just an amorphous amalgamation of sort of metastasizing stupidity?
I am tempted to give the Vorlon answer to the question, which would be yes, if you've ever seen Babylon 5.
Yes.
Yes, for those who don't know, Vorlons are a species that tend to answer questions as if they were Zen masters. So there are movements within it. Sadly, one of those movements is quite hateful. They call themselves the alt-right. I'll just call them neo-Nazis because I've heard the same rhetoric being spouted for years.
And by the way, since you mentioned the neo-Nazis, are you aware of the statement that Comrade Kumquat made yesterday after the visit of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas?
Yes, that he will definitely try to negotiate a peace. I mean, to give you an idea
how
bad I think...
That's not the one I had in mind, Will.
Oh, no problem. Well, I might not have paid much attention to it, but suffice it to say...
I just want to give you a minute to get the hockey puck.
Oh, don't worry, please. I teach. I've been to schools where kids literally threw excrement at each other, so I may be beyond the hockey puck phase.
Okay, so here it is. I also applaud the Palestinian authorities' continued cooperation with Israel. They get along unbelievably well. They work together beautifully.
Well, not really. They do cooperate on some issues, like any two neighboring bodies would. But, I mean, the problem for the Palestinians is they don't have much power. And the Palestinian Authority, I joke that under Arafat, that when there were news of various scandals on money being skimmed on gas, I'm not surprised. Why? I'm a Chicagoan. But Trump simplifies everything to such a basic level that I think most of the listeners of the Horn exceeded him in fourth grade. I mean, this is a very difficult situation. We should realize that it does bear some similarities to the problems in Northern Ireland as well as South Africa, although there are differences. But to say that it's just a matter of they work beautifully, no, not always. And the fact that there is still an occupation, and occupations inevitably backfire. And even if you want to let go, it's hard to let go. We're being tried to let go. And what did the right in his country do?
Killed him real dead.
Yes, after vilifying him, after a few clergymen tried to make it seem, well, he's an enemy of the people, enemy of God. And what did Bibi Netanyahu say when this rhetoric was thrown? Absolutely nothing. I mean, I have had more respect for Ariel Sharon, although I consider him arrogant and ham-fisted, than Netanyahu, because at least Sharon, while being more than a bit of a jerk, to use an understatement, at least had some courage. Netanyahu is kind of, I like to say, Dick Cheney with even less charisma, which is saying something. But I mean, you can't just simplify a situation down to level Trump has and expect it to work. Do I want a peaceful solution? Yes. I have more faith in the EU doing something than Trump, because Trump, to my mind, is perhaps beginning to rival James Buchanan in the incompetency field. For those who forget, James Buchanan was the president of the U.S. from 1857 to the inauguration in 1861.
And he dithered our way into the Civil War.
Yes.
And then, but then while we're at it, it's unfair just to sort of unload on our only bachelor president.
Yes.
Because before him, there was Franklin Pierce, who simply couldn't be bothered to sober up long enough to be president. And
yes.
He had a hand in the dithering that led to the aforementioned Civil War.
And don't forget the Supreme Court and the Dred Scott decision, which, how would I say it, the judge actually thought he was saving the Union, to which I think the goddess of irony might have done backflips, just saying, I think we've set a new standard. I think we've set a new standard.
Well, since we've gone down this particular historical avenue, there's something that people often forget about the Dred Scott decision. And that is that it was not just about Dred Scott and slavery in particular. As odious, as disgusting, as horrifying, as revolting as that decision is and was, it also had an aspect. Am I right in this? Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. It also struck down the Missouri Compromise.
Yes, and that was something that was hard won. I mean,
the Missouri Compromise, you're exactly right, was hard won and was a desperate attempt to hold the Union together at a time when it could have fractured in the first place.
Right. I mean, the best way I can compare it to medically is these were sutures put in the hopes that they would hold long enough for someone to come up with a...
They were swingline staples on a sucking chest wound is what they were, Will.
Yep. All right. Well, my mom's the RN, not me, but suffice it to say, it at least held for a while. But, I mean, with the... I think the tragedy of this administration is we have someone who is perhaps arguably less qualified than Pierce or Buchanan, and who only thinks of his class. And the sad thing is, it's hard to tell how much he believes his words and how much is an act. I just presume that if his mouth is moving or if he's writing a tweeting, he's lying. But he's evidence for what Lincoln said, that you can fool some of the people some of the time. And I think that although there's some diminishment among his base of support, that it will not easily go away. I mean, John Dean, as I mentioned in our chat room, and by the way, please support the Horn, because the support is needed. George Soros is not supporting you, Mike Malloy, Nicole Sandler, or any other progressive host I know of. And sadly, I have not won Powerball. Remind me if I do. But suffice it to say that we have, as I mentioned in our chat room, John Dean, he of Watergate fame, in one of his books, mentioned there are 20% of Americans who are authoritarian followers, meaning that they do not wish to be bothered with deciding things. They want a leader. They want to follow someone. And Trump fits that image to a T.
And that is, of course,
and
of course, that's also part of the core operating system of fascism.
Yes, because fascism is just a very specific take on authoritarianism, where you are wedding corporate and government power to create a stronger state. And we can, and of course, one of my fears is we'll have our own Reichstag moment, or perhaps something similar to what happened in Russia under Putin when his numbers were low in the late 90s. Oops, a bomb. Oops, well, KGB agent arrested for planning bombs, let him go, and even Russian parliamentarian announced an attack days before it happened. Things stand, we are facing a lot of danger, but we have to remember we have allies, and we need to get our message out. And this is why the Horn and other venues are very important. So I don't expect things to go easily, but in the long run, I have hope. And again, I choose to have hope because if I look at it, when I was 18, I thought our most likely future would end in nuclear fire. But we can try to make a difference, each of us, in our own communities, whether it's volunteering or helping support a good candidate, chipping $10 or $20 to the Horn or elsewhere when you can, and realize we have to be in it for the long haul, because they are in it not just for this election and the next one. They are in it generationally. You can trace a lot of things that are going on in the Trump administration back to the Powell memo circa 1972, 1973. So we have to remember, we need each other. We have to be the mutual guarantors of each other's liberty. And
that's a great phrase.
Yes. And I believe I picked it up in my readings, but Bob, the only way that you, Tracy, myself, other members of religious minorities, such as the Muslims I met after a Thanksgiving prayer service and at a protest against the Trump Muslim ban, which even Giuliani said it was a Muslim ban, we have to watch each other's backs, because in the end, we are all we have. And in the end, we have to ask ourselves, do we want America to be a geographic term only? Or do we also want it to stand for our best ideals? The ideals that, despite their own personal flaws, Dr. King, Malcolm X, LBJ, John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy, and FDR and Truman tried to bring to fruition, and before them, others, dating back to such people as Jane Addams, Eugene Debs, and those who were just frustrated at the conditions at the turn of the 20th century. Since I think the Koch brothers would like to take us back to 1897, the William McKinley administration, if not further.
Yeah, I was thinking more like 11th century, but, you know, who am I?
Well, that's the part of the multi-generational plan. Give it about 80 or 100 years of no schools, no rights, and then we can just have a formal caste system with maybe an occasional person getting out simply because this person can actually do the numbers. I don't care. As long as he's employed and loyal to us, we can let him in. He'll be the symbol of hope. Or do we want to have a real future worthy of us? in our potential and those who have sacrificed to get us here. I don't think Rosa Parks or any number of other people fought for civil rights or women's rights or stood proud at Stonewall or elsewhere want us to just lie down and give up. It's always a constant fight because there are always those who view themselves as monarchs and are betters. And from seeing what they've done, they're hardly better than the tyrants of old Europe that Jefferson, Madison, and Franklin rallied against.
Indeed.
They may even have less fashion sense.
Well, Will, it has been a lovely conversation. I thank you very kindly. I'm going to take these last few moments to wrap up. Thanks for the kind words that you offered for the horn. I'm happy to say that thanks to James with the just the message, good break fund. We're down to only $100 to go and 8 minutes to get there.
So let's hope we get there. Don't despair.
That's a little over $12 a minute between now and the top of the hour.
And if everyone listening could maybe chip in $1, I think we'll be there.
Well, that's true, because there are a lot more listeners than there are, you know, who... And that's not a criticism, it's just a fact.
Right. We all have our challenges, but let's hope that things work out, and let's make it work out both here and in our world. Peace.
All right. Later, Will. Bye now. Our buddy Will from Chicago, who always, he brings this deeply analytical, introspective approach to our conversations, and I always enjoy them. Yeah, like I said, $100 to go. Please let's not leave a challenge laying on the table. Thank you, Sparky, for making it. Thank you so very much. Let's see. Are there a couple of things we can sort of take a run at? With only a few minutes left in the program. I've got a couple. In the state of Talabama, it is now officially legal for faith-based adoption agencies, or just adoption agencies in general in Talabama, to refuse to place children in the homes of same-sex couples, no matter how good the same-sex couple would be at taking care of the said children. They can adhere to faith-based policies and refuse to place a child with a gay couple, even if the next choice is far, far below standards of excellence that the gay couple has had to demonstrate in order to be certified to receive a foster child. Just in case you're wondering, the Alabama House of Representatives, Democrats and Republicans alike, approved the bill by a vote of 87-0. 6 people abstained. It follows on the heels of similar bills passed in Michigan, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Virginia. It is, in fact, a license to discriminate. And this, I've been sitting on this. I'm not sitting on it. I haven't been holding it back or anything. But this is just. You know, the stories that they have at the end of a newscast are called kickers or happy stories. I've got one of those. It comes from Iraq. And it has to do with some ISIS fighters. And I don't care if you're a fundamentalist Christian, a fundamentalist Buddhist, a fundamentalist Hindu, fundamentalist Jain, fundamentalist Muslim. I don't care what kind of fundamentalist you are. That's the problem, the fundamentalism. So, down in some sort of scrubby, brushy parts of the Iraq and such as,
a group of ISIS fighters were planning an ambush against local tribesmen who were opposing them. There were eight of them. It was down in the Al-Rashad region, about 55 miles southwest of Kirkuk. And they were gonna just ambush the daylights out of these tribesmen. When lo and behold, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, and occasionally a mean and spiteful one too, these eight ISIS fighters were beset by a raging herd of wild boars. Wild boars who, using their sharp, nasty tusks, ripped the living Bi'Allah out of the ISIS fighters. Gutted them like carp. Sheikh Anwar al-Asi, a chief of the local Ubayyad tribe, said, "It is likely their movement disturbed a herd of wild pigs which inhabit the area, as well as the nearby cornfields. The area is dense with reeds, which are good for hiding in." Three fighters from ISIL were near the Peshmerga checkpoint in Al-Rashad. They met some feral boars, and the boars killed the three fighters. Is it okay to offer praise to Allah for sending filthy boars to kill... Okay. There, I feel so much better now. Blessed in the eyes of the Lord is the death of an asshole. I don't think they're going to get their 72 Virginians, being how they were all befouled by pig, do you? You mean to... See, that's one of the things. If we could just get Iraq stable, there's untold numbers of rednecks in America who would fly over, pay huge licensing fees just to go hunt the wild boars. And then they'd eat the wild boars because barbecue. See, you knew there had to be some food porn in this program somewhere. Thank you, Tracy, for jumping in on Sparky's challenge. That takes us down to $75 to go. It helps a ton. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. So hopefully the rest of the challenge will be met in fairly short order. Thank you. Time to go. That story deserved. I just hope it gave you the same smile that it gave me. You're a bad man, Bob Kincaid. Thanks to all of you who do support the program. Thanks to all of you who share in this little conversation that's been going on for these many years. Thank you for the precious, finite time you invest in it. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.